Thank you, Mikael. And now I invite here the director of the Library of Eastern University of Eastern Finland. That is Jarmo Saarti, and he helps us with the discussion.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we have a quarter of an hour for discussion and comments, and please bear in mind that we have audience also online, so raise your hand and we try to get the microphone to you.
One chat question,
okay.
Yes, Riitta Koikkalainen is asking and commenting, hopped in the middle of the presentation, maybe you have already answered this, but still I ask, is there need for publishers in the world of open access? What would be their role, if any?
Thanks, exactly the same question that I was going to ask. Please, both of you, can you comment on that one?
Did you hear it?
Sorry, could you just repeat?
So what is the role of the publishers in the open access world?
I mean, the way that I see it, publishers do provide a service in quality control and the organisation of peer review. I mean, I'm aware that they really do the peer review themselves in most cases. It's done on the public purse by people in universities, but I think that, you know, there is a role for publishers, and I think that, you know, we are happy to pay for services from the private sector as we do for everything else, but the charges for those services need to be proportional to the value that's added. So I think that, I mean, there is fundamentally something wrong with the subscription business model in the internet world, but I think there is still a role for publishers to play in providing high quality value added services rather than simply selling us back the research that we paid to do to start with and paid to peer review.
Yeah, I also agree that publishers are needed. Like, for publishing on a large enough scale, doing it on a volunteer basis or having it purely managed by scholars on their, well, spare time, I don't know, evenings and weekends, it doesn't really scale up. And I think it's money well spent as long as not half of that money goes into shareholders' pockets. Like, as long as the publishers are pricing their services reasonably, there's no problem with having professional backing to facilitating the services. But, of course, in some disciplines, there might be more of a self-organizing climate that people are also get academic credit for facilitating publishing to a different degree, but I don't think it really scales up to science and research at large.
I would just add, actually, that I think that in a world where everything is open access, or where open access is the default, then I would hope that without the monopoly of subscriptions, that the market would function more like I would expect a private sector market to function. There'd be more competition between publishers. There'd be more reasons to innovate than simply for them to rely on selling subscriptions.
Okay, I'll add a bad one for that one. So if we are going to have a future where publishers are acting in an open access way, where is the need for the libraries?
I think, I mean, we've seen the role of the library change dramatically over the last few years anyway, and it will continue to change, and I would expect that it will be very, very different, you know, within the course of my career. But I think there will always be a role for some input in the organisation of knowledge, the curation of knowledge, and making sure that things are made discoverable. So it may well be that we don't have the same effort in subscriptions or cataloguing or you know, book acquisitions or whatever. But I think that the skill set of the information professional, the skill set of the librarian, will continue to be more important in the future. And I think, I mean, look at areas where we're growing our business, things like digital curation, digital preservation are going to become more and more important.
Yeah, I agree with Dominic here that I don't really see a danger for the library in terms of what open access provides. On the contrary, I think exactly the task of educating people and providing the tools to really find, retrieve, manage, and really navigate the very complex jungle of academic literature is something that I think the library can really emphasize in the future.
I'm a researcher, so I'm really new to these topics of open access in general. Just a few weeks ago, I've been more or less ignorant of these things. But however, I could say that you sounded quite positive about this open access publishers and the future. And it doesn't sound to me, based on the discussion that I've been following just recently, admittedly. But so there clearly are problems with this new open access. It brings in new publishers who do it for business. I'm a physicist, and we still have a good situation. We had a good situation before. It was physical societies that were taking charge of the publication. They did it with a clear commitment to good peer review for good science. And this is clearly suffering with some of the new open access publishers. They do it for business, and they sacrifice good peer review for the sake of good business. This is clearly a problem. So what is your comment on this? And it's clearly in other sciences as well, and not just physics.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a common conception that, you know, in general, that open access journals would be somehow of lesser quality. And I think a lot of it is attributed to this notion of predatory publishers, you know, newly founded journals which are not really upholding the full scientific ethics in how they conduct and facilitate peer review and are mostly focused on getting author fees. But I think there are many proposed solutions to this for how this could be managed, but I think it all boils down to, you know, in research evaluation, the persons who are looking at the track record of research should be aware of the kind of, they should first of all read the piece of research they are evaluating to see that it is sound science, but also, of course, be aware of explicitly predatory journals in order to weed those out. But, you know, I'm all for free competition, and, you know, with 1,000 good entries, there are a few bad apples among them who are not interested in upholding scientific integrity, but rather profit. So it's really a necessary evil in that sense, that if we want an unrestricted market and have anyone the power to set up a journal and call it a journal, then, of course, there are also people who are not focused on that aspect. But, you know, there's not one solution. There are white lists, there are black lists of journals, but I still think it boils down to just academics evaluating the output of journals and clearly then communicating misbehavior to each other and to the public.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Yeah. I think I would just add that in my experience, what we see is that bad journals don't stay around for very long. It doesn't really work to just take money and then publish any old rubbish, because their reputation will die very, very quickly. I started my career with a company called Biomed Central, which is now part of the Springer Group. It's a for-profit, private, open-access publisher. And when we started, you know, no one had heard of us, no one wanted to publish with us. But by maintaining kind of high peer review standards, the journals started to get good reputations, and over years you build up impact factors and those sorts of things that sort of make people trust the journals more. Public Library of Science, similar sort of thing. It's not for profit, but it is a paid open access model. They have a small portfolio of journals. They're very well regarded in those fields, and we've seen other people, you know, try just sort of to be in it for the money. But if you're not providing the quality, people won't want to publish with you, and so the market kind of kills them off after a while.
Okay, any more questions, comments? I would like to add to that point of view also, that not just wait for the markets to act, but I think there's at the present a great role for the libraries to inform our researchers about these predator publishers, because for
research, it's not good advice to wait for the markets to work, because even at our university we have some, luckily only some evidence, but even professors with good reputation have went to this fall and published in a predated ones, and then you lose the paper actually. But if there are no more comments, I would like to discuss a bit about this long tail of publishing in an open access world. Who takes care of the long tail? Who takes care that the open access publishing that is done now in a very wide varied way, it's still in use after 50 years or still in use after 200 years? That's something that I have been thinking, because I have lived through the internet and I know that a lot of stuff have gone from the 1990s, for example. Any comments on that?
Yeah, again, I think this is part of the role that the institution can play in digital curation, digital preservation. I think these are really important, and we're seeing, I mean, my library has recently, we have a sort of a research centre into digital curation based within the university, and the library has recently employed a sort of digital preservation specialist to make sure that we are keeping things in perpetuity. And actually, who better than the library to do that? You know, as our university's been there since 1583, but actually the university, the library was there from 1582. The university started as a collection of books that were there to remain, and we still have those books. So, you know, we have a responsibility to preserve everything that's submitted to the repository in perpetuity. That's one of the things that we say we will do.
Yeah, I think this is a concern, because in the early days of open access and still, it's mostly about picking low-hanging fruit and getting content into the repository or on the web in any format possible. It doesn't really matter about metadata or data structures, or is it fully machine-readable or not, but I think it's really now a time to stop and think about, you know, not just preservation, but also, you know, that the data formats used are such that they facilitate also new forms of science, like data mining and stuff like that. So it's just not put up in any way without considering the implications down the line. But there's no single solution for this, but it's something that should have experts working on.
Okay, any more questions, comments? Everybody is getting hungry, so Pekka wants to say something and then lead us to the lunch.
Well, if the mic doesn't come up, I will come down. So I'm Pekka Ospu from the Open Science Center in the University of Jyväskylä. And on the behalf of Suurimme Project, I would like to thank both of our great speakers this morning. And just comment to Mikael's presentation. What a information package that was. It will take days to get something out of that. And I really hope that somebody in the Finnish government and the ministries will also get these presentations in their hands and will go through that very, very carefully indeed.
Can I defend myself for
yes.
a second? Yeah, it was meant like a Christmas dinner. You know, you're not supposed to be hungry for a while now for information about the benefit of open access, you know. Mm?
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Mikael and Dominic. By the way, Dominic, do you have any idea whether that kind of information and about the open access was in any way behind the decisions and requirements made in REF?
Yes, it was. Yeah, there have been numerous kind of government reports into open access, which then informed the REF policy, I think. But I think from my point of view, actually, one of the things that Mikael's presentation really reminded me of is that whilst we've been talking a lot about compliance, because we have to do open access now, it suddenly becomes something that's a real sort of problem in so much as the way that we've implemented it. We can sometimes forget to talk about the benefits because we're so focused on the implementation and making sure that we're doing things properly. So it's been really refreshing to actually just kind of go back to the real benefits of open access and make sure that people continue to be made aware of those.
Okay, thank you very much. And now we go to the lunch and we'll change to Finnish a bit later. And to the persons that are at the, watching this at the internet, we'll be starting at 1 o'clock sharp. Thank you very much.